Thank you, Danny and President Denny and Rotary for this opportunity and for the this forum to talk to you as citizens, but because of the kind of citizens you are, perhaps through you to others who look to you for guidance and information and your own sound counsel. I appreciate your having us. I'm sure I speak for all the other guests who are here, too. Danny, being the good businessman he is, tacked a little margin on to the cost of your lunches, which will be split evenly between the Rotary Club and the Treasury of the state of Indiana. We look in every corner, as we say. I do want to talk to you today about the situation facing our state, the way that is reflected in the public finances of our state, and what we ought to do about it. And because we'll be talking about money in tight times, we'll be talking about the challenge which every business person knows, which every household knows in difficult times of saying no to others, but also even to your own, some of your own hopes and aspirations. And so we will try to approach that in spirit of sobriety this year, but also spirit of humor and optimism, and that's what I hope to leave you with later today. My father was good at saying no. I have sometimes recalled that days long gone when, having earned a little money, a couple of my first summer jobs, I got up the courage and said to him what was then a sort of an unusual suggestion. Dad, I said, you know, I was thinking about taking some of my savings and buying a car. What do you think of that? Dad said, well, I don't think much of it. He said, but I don't know. He said, you keep your grades up, get a haircut, and read the Bible every night. We'll talk about it. So a few weeks later, I'm back. And I said, Dad, about that car. He said, yeah, well. I said, look at my report card. I got straight A's again, and I've been reading the Bible every night. And Dad said, yeah, well, I don't see your hair being any shorter. And I said, hey, Dad, listen, it's right here in the Bible. Yeah, Moses had long hair. Samson had long hair. Even Jesus had long hair. My dad said, yeah, did you notice? All of them walked everywhere they went, too. Now, I remember from your past hospitality that this particular crowd likes a little visual stimulation, so I brought some, which I hope will be of help in sharing with you, first of all, some perspective, and then secondly, the outlines of a plan, which will be presented in all its detail, some 172 pages of it, to the Indiana General Assembly, really starting tomorrow and officially on Thursday. Incidentally, we're fortunate to have among the guests who was not introduced individually, but one of the most important members of the Assembly is here as a guest, Wynn Moses, representative from Fort Wayne, who told me that he's performing one of those, what do you call them, make-goods? Make-ups. Right. Make-ups. That's a very good rule, by the way, I think, a Rotary, that if you skip a meeting, you gotta make it up. When the General Assembly might consider a similar rule, don't you think? Well, let's see. First, let's just start with a recognition that not only are we not in this alone, things could be a heck of a lot worse. This is the latest map of states facing deficit. There are only a handful left, which will close this fiscal year by living within their means, spending no more than actually came in. We have to do, as I'll bet you a lot of businesses in this room had to do, some further trimming in order to stay there, because as you know, or we'll soon see, revenues are not going to be what we expected them to be, but we'll make it. And a lot of thanks goes to the General Assembly and people in both parties who've been very, very careful with the people's money in the last few years, and so we did not hit this economic patch of difficulty in the same vulnerable shape as a lot of other states. And all over America, really unfortunate things are happening to states who were living too close to the edge, or maybe not living within their means to start with. And this is just a partial list, but you know, things that we have not seen in Indiana, and at this moment, most citizens can't contemplate are happening. The best example I can give you, education, public education, is being cut, and I mean dramatically cut, in other states. Yesterday, it's not even on here, Virginia, a state we don't think of, is particularly distressed economically, announced a 7% cut, amounts to $400 or $500 per pupil cut from this year's level in their education support. Now, we believe we're in a position not to do that here, and we have to make certain not to. But what you would consider unthinkable previously has been happening. They have been letting prisoners out of jail early as a cost-saving measure in state after state around the country. And in Philadelphia, a police officer was killed by one of those early released prisoners. And real human consequences happen if you mishandle the people's money. This is not about just counting beans. Quick little bit of history here. Remember how suddenly this came upon us here in Indiana. Left-hand side here, you can see that in April, up through April of 08, we were at what the economists, maybe none of us, but the economists would call full employment, 4.4% in April, and hoping that somehow the clouds we could all see coming would not rain on Indiana, but they did very suddenly. Big jump when the RV industry almost closed down. And particularly the automotive and manufacturing industries began to slow, and so we went from below to above the national average. We're right there in the soup now with everyone, just in terms of employment. This was reflected in actual receipts. So think of this as the top line that you'll watch in your businesses all the time. Reading from left to right here, July, August, September, we were chinning ourselves just barely on the forecasted revenue. But then, starting in October, less than forecast, less again in November. And the third bar for December reflects a revised forecast. And we not only were below the original, but also even below the revised forecast for that 1 month. I hope that's not a harbinger but of the next several months, but it could be. A little quick history, as a reminder. We've been here before. This is the decade leading up to 2005. We had 7 straight unbalanced budgets, meaning that the state was spending more than it was taking in that given year. And eventually produced the inevitable result. The state ran through all its cash balances, and by the end of fiscal year 2004, we were in a net negative worth position. Debts, they were owed to schools, local governments, and universities. The state basically stiffed them for 6 months because it didn't have the money to pay them. And so we owed more than we had in cash, and you know what that's called in the non-governmental world. And starts with a B. So we did something so brilliant. I know you'll just be so impressed when I tell you how we addressed this problem. We began spending less than we took in. Was that not shrewd? It came to us in a blinding epiphany that this is a 2005 to 2008 average. This is one of the slowest growth rates of spending in any American state, which is why that first map looks like that first map looks like. It even masks a tighter discipline than that. In the first year of the four, spending growth was only a little over 1%. And although revenue growth was not remarkable, we weren't seeing some big surge, we're not sitting on oil or natural gas or things that we get a lot of revenue from, like some fortunate places, but it was good enough. That discipline was good enough to end the string of unbalanced budgets, and every budget since has been balanced and thrown off a little extra money, so we were able to pay back the debts and are now build up the reserves, and now we have about 10%, $1.3 billion, about 10% of a year's budget in the bank account as a cushion against the kind of times which have now arrived. And hence the situation in which we are a white state on that map you looked at earlier. We have a AAA credit rating while other states are getting downgraded. The goal is somehow against the current and the odds here to stay where we are. So let's talk about the budget that might help us do that, the one we'll be sending here in the next couple of days. We're now told to expect $28.3 billion in the biennium we're about to enter, or will in July. Again, this assumes the new forecast holds up. And who's to say? So we are going to propose total appropriations that match those revenues, rounding error below them, actually. And that would protect and preserve the same $1.3 billion of reserves we have now. And I'll come back to why I think that is so important in a little bit. Let's talk about the revenues here just for a second. The new forecast reflected in the yellow-green bars took 9%, or basically $1 billion, away from what we expected in the year we're in. States on a July 1 fiscal year, so we had to adjust for about $1 billion less revenue. Now, the budget that we passed contemplated a $250 million surplus, so the first one-fourth of the problem was covered by the care which we had taken in spending in the first place. The other three-quarters of a billion we had to find through other reductions, so we found them. Not easy, but from anything we can see now, if the new lower forecast, if it doesn't get any worse than that, we will dock the ship again on June 30th in operating balance, so to speak, and the reserves will still be where they are. Please notice, however, the reality that is staring us in the face, that to me is one of the most important things everybody, you know, in government needs to understand. On the new forecast, look at the far right. Revenues in 11 will still be less than we were expecting for this year. So even if this forecast holds up and things don't get any worse than that, we are looking at the prospect of spending less, having less to spend for public purposes 2 years from now than we thought we had this year, and we were hardly operating on a profligate budget this year. So here are the, I'll call them boundary conditions, that I'm proposing for the next budget. You know, anything that we do in government has to be a cooperative and collaborative exercise, and all the good things that happen there, as I said earlier, have many, many fathers and mothers and authors. And so the route from here to a successful outcome will have all kinds of input and changes. This, I'm just proposing a starting point. But I do think we can draw a frame around through some principles whatever it is we finally decide to do in its detail. And here are mine. The budget has to be honestly balanced. In the past, Indiana has occasionally resorted to things like dipping into pension funds or the practice of late payments, which I mentioned a little earlier, pushing things into the next fiscal year, pretending you didn't really. You know, we don't operate on an accrual basis in government. And that allows for some games if people are willing to play them. We should say no. We've stopped doing that. We should never go back to it. As I say, it's leave it in the museum of bad government where we sent it. No tax increases. I hope nobody will really want to argue with this, but you know, when people are strapped, when our fellow citizens are having trouble paying their bills and their mortgages, when our businesses are struggling to maintain payroll and not lay off people, the very, very, very last thing that we should ever resort to is making those situations worse by taking more of those scarce dollars out of the private and productive economy and into government. I want to protect the reserves, and I'll say more about that as we wrap up. And here are some funding priorities that, to me, are the most fundamental. Now, I want to say that, with only a few exceptions, everything, especially after 4 years of some care and austerity, the state government's doing has an argument, has some value. And there's very, very little there anymore anyway that I would say government should just never have done that in the first place. We'll keep looking, but believe me, there is not much of that. But at some point, like any family, like any business, when there's a limit to dollars coming in, you have to be more judicious about those things which are truly important, which are must-dos as opposed to nice-to-do. And here are the ones that come to the top of my list, and I hope you'll understand the reasons why. Public safety. We've strengthened it. Things like our Homeland Security operation, probably never been in better shape, responded very, very well to floods and storms and other catastrophes this last year. The state police, much stronger, many more troopers on the road. Again, another fourth consecutive decrease in traffic fatalities. It is saving lives. Don't want to back up from that. I talked about corrections. It will cost more money, by the way, just to make sure we're not turning anybody out of prison before they're really ready to go back to us. Productive or at least a law-abiding life. So I don't think government has a mission more important than the protection of the public safety, and that's at the top. K-12 education. Our goal will be to maintain today's funding levels. That will take new money. They're on a different fiscal year than we are, but leaving the details out, it will cost more money, but we can protect today's levels. And I won't take time with it now, but I'll certainly speak to it later, and particularly in the state of the state a week from today. There's an enormous opportunity for more money in education if we spend the dollar better. Only 61 cents, by a generous definition, of the education dollar gets to the classroom. And there's a huge opportunity through the consolidation of overhead and back office operations and smarter procurement and more judicious construction and debt service to make the dollars of today go so much further. Just memorize one factoid from today. Every 1% improvement in the efficiency of the education spend is well over 100 million new dollars, and you can hire 3,000 teachers with that. So we need your support as taxpayers, yes, for education, of course, but also for seizing the opportunity of this moment, the necessity of this moment, to spend the education dollar better than we have before. You know, put bluntly, the education system of this state or any state must be a learning system for children, not an employment bureau for adults. Medicaid, our budget will maintain all services and all recipients. In many other states in recent years, and certainly right now, people are being evicted from the Medicaid rolls because they can't afford to keep them there anymore. We consider this a out-of-bounds area. And the protection of children. Indiana's made magnificent strides the last 4 years. We've really gone from worst to first. We've won national awards now for protecting children, where we were, by every single measure, in the bottom five or worse. We cannot retreat on this or back up. So all the new caseworkers and the new services that have been funded and put in place, we're determined to maintain. So, if you protect those areas, as I just described, how do you do it? Well, a variety of very unwelcome things, but things we believe can be done. Agency budgets, on average, some much more, but on average, will be 8% smaller. We've been forced to take a one-year timeout from employee pay raises in state government. I hope 1 year is all that's necessary. We'll be doing very, very little capital spending. Although there's an asterisk on this I want to come back to. These are examples of programs that we will regrettably have to reduce or in some cases eliminate. Many of the best would come back. They're not, this is just an almost random sample, but I don't want to leave the impression with anyone that this will be an easy exercise. Almost nothing on this list. There are a couple of these things that don't work at all, but most of them are very worthy projects, but things that are just going to have to be part of the solution. Every one of us will have to yield for a year or two on things that are important to us, and that goes for me too. So here's a partial list. I wanted to complete the job of making full-day kindergarten universal in the state. We couldn't find a way to do it unless we dipped into existing education funds. And so that last step, and we've taken many, but we're only about two-thirds of the way there, and I'm afraid it's going to have to wait a year or two. Our idea about guaranteed tuition, likewise, We had plans to add another tool to our economic development toolbox with a so-called high-growth fund that could be used for deal closing and tie-breaking, and leave that out. The Life Sciences Initiative, which we have supported and which has enormous potential value, but may have to proceed on a private sector basis for a year or two without direct government infusions. Now, in this context, I hear some people say, gosh, with all these challenges, that's all we can do. We'll just have to spend all our time and energy on the budget. My answer is that's backwards. Because of the exigencies of the moment, we must have reform. Reforms like dollars in the classroom that I talked about. Here's the way you get more spending for more teachers, cheaper textbooks, better paid teachers within the dollars that we're pouring into education right now. Same for the local government reforms recommended by the Kern and Shepherd Commission. Now, these reforms, and I've selected about two-thirds of them that as my suggestion for what we do this year, not only should they not be set aside, they become must items now in the context of tighter budgets. Their benefits are principally in terms of making government more effective and accountable and transparent, but they also save money. And if there was ever a time we needed it, it's now. In higher ed, there's a lot that can be done in higher ed, I believe, just as in K-12, to get more academic success from the same dollar. So I also bought 300 tickets in hopes of winning the 50-50. And because every little bit helps, as you know. Let me close and then take a few questions. Let me close with a couple other observations. The first is simply that to ask for your understanding and your support as citizens for these steps. If we take these steps, they may seem difficult, but in other states at this moment, this would seem like a tame list, as I've illustrated and as your reading of the daily papers probably has already told you. Secondly, there will be, it appears clearly, some form of federal aid to states as a part of the federal government's attempt to stimulate the economy. And at some point, this will become material to these discussions, but please note the following. At this point, we don't know when, we don't know how much, we don't know in what form or under what terms any of this federal money will come. Some apparently will come in terms of infrastructure spending. We know what to do with that. We will accelerate important public works projects, which put people to work, and which Indiana is a national leader on already by virtue of our major moves initiative, the toll road transaction, and so forth. So roads and bridges and possibly mass transit and sewers and things like that. There will also be apparently some form of aid that could be taken into the budget. But I ask you when you hear about this to think how you would use such an opportunity in your business. This will be, whatever else we don't know about it, we know this, it will be temporary. It will be one-time money. It may last 1 year, it may last 2 years, but it won't last more than that. This state and others have made a very fatal mistake in the past by avoiding hard choices, taking federal dollars when they came, putting them into the base of their budget, and then in a year or two when they went away, they were left on the beach with bills they could not afford and in worse shape than the last time. And we must not make that mistake. So that's why we don't have a plug, we don't have a guess, we don't make any suggestions in our budget for any of those dollars. If and when they come, we should all work together to think about important one-time investments that do put people to work and that do build for our future, I hope, but that do not paper over tough budget decisions that really are necessary or push them out a couple years and make them worse than they are right now. I hope you understand what I'm talking about. Last, let me just close by saying to you that Those of us who have worked through and produced this budget are very, very sober about the challenges we face. We're not at all, of course, happy to have to make some of the suggestions that are here. But we also, from watching day by day what is happening elsewhere, believe this, that Indiana's problems are more manageable than most, if only we have the will to manage them. And secondly, that we must have fixed in our minds as a goal to come out of this recession stronger than we went in and relatively stronger than other states. And I'll bet I'm not the only person here who can quickly think of several examples in the business context of businesses in a down market who, because they were competitive and did the right things and made the tough decisions, emerged with more market share than before and with a bigger edge on their competition than before. And that's my goal for Indiana when today's tough times are behind us, and I hope it'll become your goal too. Thank you very much. I'd love to have your questions. Sir. This is an excellent question, and I think this year we can be a year when we take positive steps forward. First of all, that college tuition program, which I said we're going to have to wait a year or two on, and by the way, that's not so much a budget question as a financial markets question, given the way we were going to finance it. The time for that could come back more quickly even than our state revenues do. But that was to guarantee any Indiana kid at least 2 years at Ivy Tech, our community college. And you're absolutely right. Historically, Indiana has really trailed. We have one of the still, even though Ivy Tech is the fastest growing part of higher ed, we still have one of the lowest percentages in America of young people starting in the community college as opposed to the four-year schools. And the tragedy is such a huge percentage of the kids go to the four-year schools and don't finish. Now, for instance, I talked about the federal dollars being used for one-time investments. We are already committed to a big expansion of Ivy Tech and the community college system, and that could be one of the things we do, is accelerate that. Certainly, it's on the list of things that I'm thinking about suggesting after we do see what, if any, found money there is. But I think you're absolutely right. This is something we need to do anyway. There's enormous demand right now with jobs shorter for education. You know, credit to our young and not-so-young people in this state who see that one thing they can do in a tough time is to go improve their work skills and their educational level of attainment. And we got to make sure we have the capacity to handle them. That's a dead-on suggestion. The question about fair share of any federal dollars is very, very salient on the subject of infrastructure. I've already sounded off about this. Indiana gets the shaft under the current federal highway formula and always has. We get 92 cents for every dollar that you pay in federal gas taxes. Indiana gets 92 cents back. There are states that get $3. And there is no correspondence right now between the states that are so-called donee states get more than they pay and economic distress. In fact, some of the states that get $2 and $3 have no unemployment. I'm talking about the Dakotas and Wyoming, places like this. So we have already argued, and I've written directly to President-elect Obama, got the governors, some of the governors, to join us in this, certainly talked to our whole delegation, and said, you know, really they ought to fix the highway formula, but at a minimum in this interval, if this is supposed to be about jobs and activity in places that have lots of unemployment, then the last way you ought to divvy up that money is based on the current formula. So I'm going to concentrate my efforts there. I have no idea how they're going to do the rest of it, whether it will favor us or not. The thing I just urge everybody to remember, I mean, if they send us the check, we will cash it. But these are dollars being borrowed from our children. Washington does not have this money, as you know. They're going to print money and throw it at the problem. I hope they throw it in an intelligent way, and I'm not saying I'm against the idea of doing it at all. Of course not. But I hope that they'll be careful about its use. I hope when it arrives in states, states will be careful, and I guarantee Indiana will. Danny? Question is an update on our major moves program, the one that secured close to $4 billion of funds for infrastructure in the state. How does it fit? First of all, Danny, well over half those funds have not yet been invested, and they will spend out, the rest will spend out over the next several years. Secondly, I think that This was fortuitous timing for us, really. Before the first federal dollar arrives, see, now the whole country agrees, and the president-elect on down, that one of the whatever else government can do that might help the economy now, investing in infrastructure, is at the top of the list. It puts people to work when you build a road, and that road you built is an investment that pays off in the future. Somebody comes and locates a business next to it. Well, that's a familiar tune. That's exactly what we were saying here in Indiana 3 years ago. And at the National Governor's meeting with the President-elect, I didn't say a word. I couldn't get one in edgewise anyway with my colleagues, you know, wringing their hands and begging with their tin cups. But so I thought best to leave the floor to them. But two different governors mentioned Indiana to President-elect Obama as an example of why this infrastructure thing was such a great idea. You know, we're several billion dollars and years ahead. And so, before the first federal dollar comes, in this year, we will be breaking a record. You know, as tight as this money is, remember, infrastructure is off these books. It's gas tax revenues and that money we captured through the toll road lease. We will be setting a record by a couple $300 million of new investment in the future of this state. And we will add on top of that anything that might come from Washington. So you could say that somewhat accidentally, Indiana had its own counter-recession program called Major Moves even before Washington got busy. Yes, sir. Major Moves was a response to our discovery that there was about a $3 billion, and really it's more than that, was more than that, gap between the projects the state had promised somebody, committed to, and the funds that were going to come in. And it was an attempt to fill that gap. As I've sometimes observed, I didn't get up one morning and say, gee, wouldn't it be fun to lease the toll road? No, I stayed up late at night, many nights, thinking, how are we going to close this gap? People all over Indiana, there are necessary projects all over the state. I mean, really valuable ones, not bridges to nowhere. I mean, things that really will be useful to our future and will help create jobs. And there was no way to keep those promises or build those things, and that's what we did. But that's the way to think about it. So we layered in the better part of $4 billion into the plan, really a new plan we wrote for public works construction. And we can still use more. And there are categories Major Moves doesn't address, like sewers, which also are very important to our future. But we closed at least an enormous part of a gap that otherwise would have been there and would have held us down for a long time. Were you assigned to ask a question? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes, I put that point off, and then I, in my haste, omitted it. The reserves. Just two simple points. You'll have thought of them anyway. The revenue estimators missed by $1 billion this year. And by the way, they've been pretty good. I've been impressed with the folks there, the committee of folks from our universities and elsewhere who've worked on this. Their track record historically has been pretty good, but they missed by $1 billion this year. Who's to say it can't happen next year? And if we spend down those reserves and they're wrong, then where will we be? Second point, if anybody in the room knows how long this recession is going to last, see me right after the presentation, please. Because I don't know. And honestly, I suspect this thing's going to be worse before it's better, and it may be longer than the historical averages. Some say it's already approaching that. So I think it would be the height of folly to take the easy route and start spending down the savings account, not knowing how badly we may need it in 1 year or two. And there's a roadmap here that avoids doing that. And even though it's will require a little something, a little give, a little patience from everybody, I think it's the best way for all of us to approach the public's business. As always, this has been a great forum. I appreciate your making it available on short notice. I do always feel that if I get a chance to visit with this audience, that we have the prospect to reach directly and through you many more of our fellow citizens, and I hope that'll be the case today. Thanks again. Thank you.